Thanks, welcome back.
My name's Simon Clark, I'm a recovered alcoholic. Good to see everyone back after the coffee break. I know it's kind of hot outside, so I'm sure most of you would prefer to be out there, so thanks for coming back after the coffee and the sun. Step 9, this session is dedicated completely to step 9. It says now, which means now, we need more action. Which without we find that faith without works is dead. Okay, so remember we've just had an hour reflection, reviewing the first 5 proposals, finding out if we've admitted anything in 6 and 7. We've answered yes to our satisfaction. We've now worked with the step 6 prayer and the step 7 prayer. That's now completed. Now we need more action. Now, if your hour is in the morning, and you've done a step 5 early in the morning, and you've had that hour and done 6 and 7 in the morning, there is no reason why those amends shouldn't be made immediately that afternoon. I remember after doing step 5 with Peter, going home with 6 and 7, there were some amends that I had to do immediately. So let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. That's when the 8th step list is made. It can't always be done at inventory. I make it when I'm working with a guy and he's reading me his inventory in step 5. I'm writing the 8th step list. So once he's completed 5, 6 and 7, he now has a list of amends. With whom we are willing. Okay. Now, I'll just share my experience on this. What I had to do, I had about 150 amends the first time round, and I had to section these off into direct amends, family amends, financial amends. There were some that I wasn't willing to do, there were some that I was willing to do immediately, and I had to section them all off. I needed to have a very clear plan on how to approach this, because I really only get one shot at it with amends, and it had to be a good one in each case. So I had to get a very clear picture. And you know, a lot of people say that steps 4 and steps 5 were big deals, and they were for me as well. Looking at the manifestation of self for the first time isn't comfortable. Inventory isn't meant to be comfortable. But to be totally truthful, I really saw the picture of my alcoholism in the 8th step and 9th step. And I really saw that with my effort to run life on self-will, and I saw that I had to go back to pretty much most people I'd come across in my life, because I was so selfish and dishonest. I took from people, I stole from people, I harmed people, companies that I'd worked for, co-workers that I'd worked with, family, friends of family. There were also some deceased people on that 8th step list, one of which was my father, my grandparents. There was a whole... it was just big. My 8th step list was just big. But on each one of those amends, there was action required. Even if it was just to pray for the willingness to be able to do one of them, but there was action required. And when I looked at that and I said, you mean I need to... Yeah. I've got to go back and I've got to face every single one of these people. Not say sorry, but to repair the damage done. All of those people. And my experience is that most of the guys that I work with, most of them balk at step 4, 9 or 12. They're the 3 steps where people who haven't had a sufficient step 1 experience, or they haven't fully conceded, or they do not believe they're alcoholic, they will balk around 4, 9 and 12. That's been my experience. Since we made it when we took inventory, we subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated on our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. You know, and Peter reminded me at that time. He said, why do you think they're reminding you there? Because there's a huge course of action and I've got to go out and repair damage done. Pay all of the money back that I stole, manipulated people out of. Pay all of that back. Absolutely. This is a tall order. The book says these are drastic and revolutionary proposals. And I owed a lot of money. And I had a lot of people to go see. And I had a lot of people to contact. I also had a lot of people to find. But I was willing to find each and every one. And I have, out of all of those amends today, and this was 3 years ago, I've got one financial amend outstanding out of 150, and I'm nearly to the end of that payment scheme. 5 months off of that payment scheme. The book goes on to then describe various scenarios of how do we approach the guy we hated. When to emphasise the spiritual future, when not to. When to talk about God, when not to. How we behave in the amends process. It says, under no condition do we criticise such a person or argue. We tell him we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. It never says in steps 8 and 9 in this book that we put ourselves at the top of the amends list. It also never says that I hear so often is that just because we're not drinking today, that's the biggest amends we can make to everybody around us. My book doesn't say that. Also says is that in 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Now, going to these people, I was afraid. Because what I started to do is I went into fear. And I started coming from my mind, well, I know how he's going to react. Well, I can't go to him because he's going to do this. And I certainly can't pay all of that back because I'm not going to have any left in my bank. You see, and if I start operating from my mind, which is where the main problem lies, I'm not going to do it. The book says 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. 90% of the time, or my means, the unexpected happens. Yeah? What I think is going to happen doesn't. And didn't and hasn't. Throughout the amends process, I underestimated the human capacity for forgiveness. I thought everybody was just as selfish, self-seeking and dishonest as me. I underestimated it. You know? Now there were some people on that list, I'll tell you now, not for shock value, but just because it's the truth, there were some people on that list that I nearly killed. I've also had 9th step amends turn into 12 step opportunities to carry this message. Goes on to talk about the financial side. Most alcoholics owe money. Yeah, no kidding. I've never met one yet that doesn't owe money. We don't dodge them. Don't dodge our creditors. Telling them what we're trying to do. Yeah, and I took all these people trying to do, and I said, I am working the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous to recover from alcoholism and drug addiction. I cannot get over drinking until I've done my utmost to straighten out the past. And I was very specific. I said, with most of these people, the time when I did X or Y, I know that I was selfish and dishonest. And I know that I hurt you. As part of this process, I'd like to know, what is it I can do to make this right with you? And then I was told to shut up and just listen. And then this person, those people, they said, well, actually, Simon, I'd like you to do this and this and this. There's my amend. Repairing the damage. I've asked them what I need to do to make this right. They've told me what they need to do, and I write down to that person's name on the list, X, Y, Z, I need to go do this. And that's my amend. There's the action I need to take to repair that damage. Financially, I owed everybody. I mean, I owed sports clubs, I owed banks, I owed my mother, I owed taxi drivers, I owed sandwich shops, friends, post offices that I'd robbed from. And here's an interesting one. I stole from a post office. I robbed a post office. And I owed that post office money. And I telephoned the post office, and I remembered the guy's name, who was the post office guy at the time, and I phoned them up and I said, "Hello, my name is Simon Clark. I'd like to talk to Paul Weston, please." He won't mind his name being on this CD. So. And I said, and they said, "Ah, why?" And I said, "Well, I'm working the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I robbed the post office and I need to pay this money back." And she said, "Oh, I'm very sorry, Paul Weston doesn't work here anymore. But I can give you a contact number for him." I said, "Oh, really? Why is that?" "That's right. Paul Weston has just joined Hertfordshire Police and he's now a police officer. But I've got his telephone number for you." So I said, "Thanks very much." And I rang this guy and I explained to him what I was trying to do. And I said, I need to do this. I cannot go over drinking until I do it. But I robbed from you when you were... And he said, "Oh, yeah, that's right." He said, "I remember you." He said, you always almost seem to be on a death wish even at that age. See? It wasn't just the money I owed him, but the negative emotion that I churned up inside this guy. He was obviously concerned about me. Yeah, I owed him for that too. And I explained to him what I was trying to do, and he said, "Well, look, you know, why don't we do this?" Well, no, he was actually very forgiving. He said, "Well, we don't really need that back." And it would have been easy for me to say, "Okay, thank you very much," but it's not what it's about. This is about repairing damage. I've taken, so I owe. So I went to that guy, and he said, "I'm working with a local drug and alcohol unit." He said, "Why don't you write me a check, and I'll send this check to the drug and alcohol unit." And he said, "And leave your number there, put some information in, and let's just leave it at that." So I spoke with Peter, I wrote a letter, I sent him a copy of the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous with my contact details, and if there's anything that I could do for help, and here's the amends. Yeah. Also says, approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Now, out of all of that, my mother was the most ruthless creditor. I had stolen from her. I had manipulated her into writing checks to pay off cocaine dealers, to pay off bars, to pay off loans that I'd just walked away from and hadn't paid. And I owed her in excess of about 30,000 euros. And I rang Peter at the time, and I'd done quite well at work at this time, and my commission was pretty good. And I said, "Peter, I've made all this commission," and he gently reminded me that it actually wasn't mine, and actually that money needed to be paid back to my mum. And I was afraid to do it, being selfish and self-centred. I was worried about how much I was going to have, and I didn't want to give it away. Anyway, living with the fear around not doing it was worse than the action of doing it. I was again blocked because I was in fear. And the only reason, the way I could get out of that fear was to take the action and pay my mum back. And I sat down with my mum around the financial stuff, and I said, "Mum, I'm aware that I owe you 30,000 euros for the cocaine debts that you'd paid off, for the property that I'd stolen, from the bank loans that you'd paid, etc., 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 etc." And I said, "Mum, I want to pay all of that back." And I said, I can give that all to you. All right. Now, mum's being mum's, and my mum being my mum, she said, "Look," she said, "I don't want you to do all of that like that." I said, "Mum, how do you, I can do it now. How do you want me to do it?" It's unselfish, right? It's not on my terms, it's on theirs. And she said, "I'd like you to give me 10,000 now, and I'd like you to pay me off 1,000 each month from your salary, and do it that way." Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. And I've got about five months left on that, and that's to my mum. It says here, we must lose our fear of creditors, no matter how far we have to go. For we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. Notice that the words there is fear and afraid. That's what blocks us from doing amends. And so often you'll hear people that, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, terrified, feeling of fear about facing their past. They haven't taken the action yet. They're back into fear, into untreated alcoholism. The only way to do that is to take the action and go face them. Also says, perhaps we've committed a criminal offence which might land us in jail if it were known to the authorities. padding, it may be a petty offence such as padding the expense account. We may have admitted this in confidence to another person, but we are sure we'd be imprisoned or lose our job if it were known. I'd stolen from companies that I'd worked for. I'd stole stock. I stole time because I was constantly off work. And I owed this company quite a lot of money. And I was sure that if I was to find these people, that they'd probably shot me to the police and I'd be in serious trouble. And the book goes on to give various scenarios around this kind of stuff. And there's a prayer here in the ninth step. And again, it reminds us, reminding ourselves, page 79, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths, to what? Go to 90 meetings in 90 days? No. To find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. Various scenarios that the men's goes into here. And it says, before taking drastic action. Now, there is a number of considerations before going head on into amends. It says, before taking drastic action, top of page 80, which might implicate others, we secure their consent. Number one, there's an instruction there. If we have obtained permission, number two, consulted with others, number three, asked God to help, number four, and the drastic step is indicated, we must not shrink. And there were several amends, legal amends, around decisions that I'd made based on self within a professional environment where I'd been dishonest. And if I would have gone to the previous employer and been honest with what I had done, what it would have done, he would have sent my current employer, he would be in a very, very precarious spot, put it that way. And he may have lost his trading licence because of an act I'd done. And there were some grey areas on whether this was me being selfish and dishonest or whether this was fair competition. And what I had to do is speak with my sponsor, speak with my current employer, and let him know that I believe I've been selfish and dishonest here. I need to do this. Let him know what I was going to be doing. Obtain permission from my current employer. Consulted with others. Now, I had to go and seek legal advice around this area to see where I stood legally with the dishonesty that I had done. And I had to go into prayer. And I had to take all of that action before doing it. As it turns out, I won't go into the legal aspect of it, but as it turned out, an amend was made, not directly, because of the legal situation around that, and both parties were unharmed through it, but the amend was made. Top of 81, it says, after a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful and communicative. My family, my mother was on beta blockers and my sister was on antidepressants, and she was 16 years old because of my alcoholism in that home. They were very sick. And I had to sit down with them, frankly analyse the past, face to face with them. And I had to see these people directly. Back on page 82, you know, this is quite good. It says, sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Right? Just not drinking. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom he is so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives had with alcoholics. And in that situation with the family and sitting down with them, they told me what it was like to live with me. And I didn't really want to hear it, but it was the truth. They were both extremely disturbed emotionally and mentally as a result of my alcoholism. Financially as well. And today, as a result of that, my mum and my sister, my father had passed away by then. My mother and my sister threw me out of the home and dropped me off at the accident and emergency ward. And they didn't want anything to do with me. My sister was screaming and shouting and in absolute dismay. as there were six doctors basically committing me for insanity into a psychiatric unit. And they were all looking at me, your son, he's going to die. And my little sister, she was 16 at the time, was in tears. And it affected, my alcoholism affected her gravely. Mm. I will share with you today that once the direct amend had been made, it required action on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a monthly basis, to try and be the best brother I can for her, because she was growing up and needed and wanted an older brother, and I was so consumed with self I didn't even know she was there. And I treated her so shockingly that I didn't even deserve to have her around. Now, what I will share with you today is I'm 3 years ongoing with that amend on a daily basis, and I have a wonderful relationship with my sister today. I'm an uncle to her son. That's right, isn't it? Uncle, nephew? Yeah, uncle to her son. She seeks counsel with me when she has problems. I've stressed the spiritual feature freely with my sister, and she is now entering a spiritual way of living. We are friends. I turn up for her birthdays today. I turn up for her son's birthdays. We telephone, we talk, and we are brothers and sisters again. Same with my mum. You know, I'm growing to be the son that she wanted me to be. And I'm able to go back into that family home and give. I'm able to attend Christmases, and they sleep well at night. I'm there. And their life is not ruled by fear over, is he going to go for a drink before Christmas Day? Is he going to go for a drink afterwards? Is he going to turn up? When are the police coming? What's the next phone call about? What hospital's going to ring next? And that's what they lived with. That's what they lived with. And I hear in meetings all the time, just don't drink and you're a winner. I needed to go back and I needed to fix all of this stuff. I get given great power. Further on in the book it says, with it you can avert death and misery for others. Not just other alcoholics. In the amends process, it's revert death and misery to the people around us that we've so shockingly treated. I'll say this and close. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Yeah, inactive alcoholism and untreated, bone powder dry in AA. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He's like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, don't see anything the matter here, Ma, ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing. Reminds me of some AA meetings from where I'm from. I call them cyclone cellars. Inside of there, we hear things, all this middle of the road solution, just don't drink and you're a winner, and you're outside, there's damage and destruction everywhere. Long period of reconstruction says we must take the lead. You know, I was working with a guy the other day, and 15 years untreated in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the type of sponsorship and the type of information that he'd been given is that if he sat there long enough and prayed long enough, those people would come to him. He didn't need to go out and do anything. You see, and that's the type of information that we hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's why I'm so passionate about telling the truth as it's laid out in here along with my experience. We don't criticise those people. We just tell them what it is we need to do. What can we do to make it right? We don't criticise them. You know, and here it is for the family especially as well, and with other people in amends, is that we ask each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindness and love. You know, it goes into when we need to write a letter and valid reason for postponement in some cases, and it tells us what to do. If we can't see the person, we don't delay. There it is again. We must take the lead. We don't delay. This is action, 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 action. And then the ninth step promises. Sometimes they're called the promises. They are the ninth step promises. My experience has been is that these ninth step promises did not come true in my life. Delusion will tell you they are on a good day, untreated. But these ninth step promises turned up big time in my life before I was halfway through. And it's then that the ninth step promises started showing up in my life. Mm-hmm. It says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. If you've got an amend list of 100 people, cut it in half. Look at the 50, do those 50, and you're going to be amazed. You're going to get these promises before you've done that 50. That's what I do. Well, guys I'm working with, there's 25 amends there. Okay, oh my God, what an order, I can't go through with it. Cut it in half, Do that lot, you're going to be amazed before we're halfway through. And I guarantee the power that you'll get when you are halfway through, the rest of those amends you're going to be able to do no problem. Because you're going to have power to do them. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. Not quit the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. Great. Coming from restless, irritable, discontent to peace. Good deal. No matter how far down the scale, we will see how our experience can benefit others. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Great. Because page 52 talks about the bedevilments, uselessness and self-pity. That was how I lived, bone powder dry and drinking. Now it's telling me halfway through the ninth step, that spiritual malady is going to straighten out. And it also says we will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Well, that's great news, because page 62 tells me that selfishness, self-centeredness is the absolute root of the trouble. I can't wish it away on my own power. God can do it. And if I'm not rid of it, it's going to kill me. And he's saying, I need to get to amends, do them halfway through. And the selfishness and self-pity and losing interest in selfish things and self-seeking will slip away. That's how we smash the selfishness and self-centeredness, by the unselfish action. Whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. But you see, this is if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, before we're halfway through, this is going to start to happen in my life. And I'm a product of the big book. I'm a product of the action and the promises in the big book, and all of that has happened for me. Thanks, Pete. I'm done. Over to you.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. Welcome back. And, it's good. Pretty much everybody came back. There we go. Step 9. Step 8, I've got. Step 9. My sponsor, my original sponsor, was very keen on step 9. And he used to tell me that... That if I owed money, then whatever money I earned wasn't mine until I paid it off. However, we go through some stuff in here, and it's I don't. If people are dependent on me, and I have to look after, I have to keep a roof over my head, etc. I work on terms. We'll get to that in a moment. But it says here, that we're willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol. And this was the one that I really, this was my balking point, if you like, was step 9. That I couldn't imagine myself knocking on doors. Okay. I couldn't imagine myself saying the things that I needed to say to these people. Or even admitting that I'd stolen and I'd done other stuff. And so, but what was really interesting was by the time I'd done step 5, and by the time I'd got through steps 6 and 7, and my sponsor said, "Okay, now we go out and repair the damage." And the deal with amends, it means repair. It doesn't mean sorry. It means make good the past. So if I've done any damage, so if you make good something, what you do is, if you knock down a wall, to make it good, you've got to rebuild it. And that's what we're into here. We're about sweeping away the debris. And so we've got to reach back. And we've got to look back and we've got to sweep away the debris. And we've got to make good the damage that we've done. That's what I was told to do. And also on top of page 77, and I'll jump around a bit as well. On page 77, it's really interesting because... about two lines down, it says, "Our real purpose." Well, that's interesting. I came here to get sober. I came here to stop drinking. Now on page 77, they're telling what my real purpose is. And my real purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people around us. In this, that to fit myself is to train myself. Get fit. Get fit. Yeah, to be of maximum service to God and the people around me. You see, if I'm dying of alcoholism, I'm going to die. Okay, I'm going to go insane or die. I'm going to pursue this to the gates of insanity or death. So my life is done. I'm cooked. I come along and I say, in step three, I say, if I do this, God, and make this an example to the people I'm going to help, look after my problems. So I've been kind of raised from, I've been born again. I've been given another go at a life that I very nearly threw away, driven on self-will. So I've been reborn. I've been given another life. It says in the book, we are reborn. I should be dead. You see, I'm sober longer than I drank. I'm not sober longer than I lived, if you see what I mean, but I've not got the halfway there. But I drank for 24 years. I started drinking when I was 14. 20 years. I've stopped drinking. I started drinking when I was 14. I quit when I was 34. So I drank for 20 years. I've been sober now over 25 years. I shouldn't be alive. Alcoholics of my type don't reach 59. Because remember, I was a practicing suicide as well. I didn't like me very much. Yeah? I didn't like what I was doing. I couldn't help but do it. But I'm not supposed to be here. So, what else do I do? I didn't get sober to make a lot of money. God seemed to that. I didn't get sober to get famous. I didn't get sober. What I got sober for is to be a maximum service to God and to the people around me. The only way I know of being service to my Creator is to carry this message. That's the only way I know of doing it. I don't know any other way. I think that's part of our special gift. That's part of the special gift of sober alcoholics, because it also says in the book that someone who's armed with the facts about himself can actually talk to another alcoholic and gain their confidence in a few hours, where they've worked for years and years and years with other people and nobody understands. I understand. And I know what it feels like. I've been there. I can describe to you how you're feeling. That's a special gift. And so the real purpose is to fit ourselves. So how do we fit ourselves? Well, somebody once said to me, what we do is we suit up and show up. As the best example of this big book and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in other people's lives that we possibly can. And what does this program ask me to do? What's interesting about the ninth step in the big book is that there is more pages devoted to the ninth step than there is any other step. There's eight sides here. And they give you lots and lots and lots of different scenarios and different different examples of the lengths that we've got to go to. I mean, there's one guy in here that was going to go to jail because he wasn't paying his previous wife. And he asked his fellows in Alcoholics Anonymous, what do I do about it? And he said, we think we ought to be willing to necessarily to go to jail. However, if he did, he couldn't provide for his family now. So maybe we suggest that he write first to his first wife, admitting his faults and asking forgiveness. He did so and sent a small amount of money. He was also making the amends, actually paying the money. Mm-hmm. And he would try that's what he would try and do in the future, and make a regular payment. I mean, that's what I did with the income tax. I didn't pay income tax for an awful long time. I had to pay the income tax, and I paid the income tax on installments. I said, I can't give you all that I owe you. And they said, that's okay. What can you afford? I mean, they were really nice about it. They don't get many people turning up and saying, excuse me, I want to pay my income tax. And so I made a deal with them, and I paid them monthly installments. They were quite happy with that standing order. I didn't even notice it through my bank. You see, and it gives us a lot of stuff. So if it gives us eight sides about this, and it wasn't, this means, to me, it means it's very important. And what happened was, you see, I started going to, I paid back the wine merchant I stole from. I ended up in my end of my drinking. I actually got a job as working for a wine merchant, and I ended up in this little shed in the country with big blue drums. With on one big blue drum was stamped vodka, and on the other big blue drum was stamped gin, and I had a bottle, some bottles, little sort of fifth bottles and a funnel, and I was filling up these bottles, and there was one for you and one for me. And I was blind most of the day. I mean, it's a perfect job for an alcoholic, but I wasn't going to live very long. But besides from that, I was also into the wine, and I used to go and take the odd bottle of very, very good wine. I mean, I couldn't taste it anymore. I mean, and I figured out about how much I owed them, and I went and knocked on the door, and I said, look, I really think I owe you quite a lot of money here, because when I was working for you, we remember you, and I was stealing from you, and I think this is how much I owe you. And I mean, I don't know what the prices are these days, because this is sometime down the road, but I'm willing to pay it off. And they said, we didn't think it was you, we thought it was the owner's brother. And I went, look, I could have got away with it, but I couldn't get away with it. I hid behind someone else's alcoholism, and I can't do that. And they were very good about it, and they took the money. But you see, what happened was that after I'd done quite a lot of my amends, I started to get the promises. And actually, I've even heard somebody say that when we have a few drinks, if you look at these promises. And when I have a few drinks, I'm amazed before I'm halfway through the bottle. And I know a new freedom and new happiness. All these promises I got from drinking, I did. I can look at every one of them and say, yep, that's how I felt in the early days. That's how I felt when I was drinking. So what's happened here is by the time I get to step 9, I'm getting rewarded, if you like. I'm getting what I got from alcohol in the early days by doing this stuff. I'm here in the 9th step promises. Now, these are sometimes read out at meetings, and they're just known as the promises, as Simon says. And I always say, is we either do the work and get the promises, or sometimes are we living in the promises hoping the steps are going to show up? Because I can kind of pretend some of this stuff. I can come into a meeting and say, fine, everything's great. What's the name? For an hour, I can do that. But follow me home. Follow me home. And is my program working in my home? Or are the people around me still the same as they were when I was drinking? I'm just not drinking no more. See, this is one of the things that these steps, I change by working these steps without knowing that I'm changing. But the people around me know. If we think, if just staying sober... If an alcoholic says the only thing he needs is to stay sober, ask the people who are living with him. Get him to ask the people that are living with me. I ask the people who are living with me, am I better now? My wife divorced me after 3 years sober. She stayed with me for 14 years drinking. That's how good I was. But I started to feel these promises about halfway through my amends. Sometime was in my amends. And about this time, my life started to take off, and I started to get very busy. And I was busy in AA, and I started to get very busy with life. And for a long time, I would tell you, for years sober, I would tell you that I'd done all my amends. Done all the amends, I've done all the amends, I've done all the amends. And around about 14 years sober, I was working in a situation, and I decided that somehow or other I didn't want to. This working idea was kind of heavy, and I wasn't getting much for what I was doing, and maybe the idea of it was about time I had my share, as I thought other people were having, and I kind of hold my calls. I thought that I would have my share, you know. And I actively went out to try and marry money because I wanted my share. And I started this research program, mostly through adverts in newspapers, Lonely Hearts adverts and stuff. And I found someone. I found a great candidate. And I ended up in a place where I was very close to a drink. I was on the last. I was in the first part of step 1. I knew I was powerless over alcohol, but my life was in tatters. I was in a very, very dark place, sober. I believe I was in completely so far dry drunk that I was actually insane. I was as close to. I wanted something. I knew I couldn't drink, but I wanted something. And I could go to page 52, and I could actually look at. And I use page 52 as my barometer. And I always look at this, and I turn those bedevilments on halfway down page 52 into questions. And I say, yeah, I was having trouble with personal relationships. Yeah, I couldn't control my emotional nature. I was having rage attacks like red mist rage attacks. They were almost like a blackout. I was actually doing myself bodily harm in rage attacks. I was bouncing off the walls, punching holes in walls, sober, 16 years sober this was. I was prey to misery and depression. I couldn't make a living. I was feeling useless. I was full of fear. I was unhappy. I wasn't any help to anybody. I came through that and I started to do this again, and I revisited the work. Somebody very, very wise came along and said, sound like you need to really look at this again, and you really need to look through the steps again. And when I came to do step four and five again, I realized that there was some amends from my first batch that I hadn't done. And they were mostly around relationships. They were around the relationship amends. I'd done all the financial stuff. I'd done all the stuff with other people. I'd done all the reparation with my family, with my first wife as well, and whatever. With my first wife, it was done. But around the other relationships, I had done no. And I'd had a lot of relationships. When I was drinking, that was part of my pattern of drinking. Was that I had a lot of affairs as well, and it was, and I'd never cleared that stuff up. And what I realized what was happening was that it's kind of interesting. In my case, it may be not anyone else's experience, but because I hadn't done those amends around the sex amends, if you like, that I was still acting out the same way sober as I'd been acting when I was drinking. Because I had no perspective on how I'd harmed other people, because I hadn't confronted them with what I'd done. Once I'd realized that, now this is some way down the line, I don't know where these people are. And I started to look for a couple of people. And I managed to find one, and I managed to write a letter, and that was done. And there was someone else that I actually took with me on a geographical. I used to do geographicals, and this one I took this particular person on a geographical with me, and kind of basically dumped her basically in 6 months, and kind of left her in a really precarious position. And I couldn't find this person, and I asked some mutual friends, and they said they didn't know where she was, all this kind of stuff. I went and did some search stuff on the internet. Couldn't find her anywhere. And about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, she's still on my list. And I went back to Jersey, and I went to see someone. And I said, "Oh, you still don't know where Colette is." And they said, "Oh, Colette died." And I said, "Well, I was looking for her." And she said, "Well, we didn't. She was sick when you were asking, and we didn't want to." Say. And so what I did was I phoned her brother and spoke to her brother. I wrote a letter to her brother and I spoke to her brother. And eventually spoke to her brother about it and did the whole thing with her brother. And I'm done. And what's really interesting is that soon after that, probably for the first time in my life, I've got some kind of relationship with a lady that's kind of equal. It's kind of open-handed. And it's really, really nice. And it's the first time I've had that. And I really do put the two together. That by showing up and doing my amends, I'm getting clarity. I'm getting to see how I show up in people's lives. And the damage that I've done around me. It's all very well to do it on paper, because this is self-reflection here. When I go to somebody else and say, "How have I harmed you?" and they tell me, it's a different deal. It's different from what my head says.
Mm.
It's a different deal, you know. Somebody once said, if you want to know how much harm you did, then what you do is you get your wife, your ex-wife, your neighbors, your boss, and all your friends, put them in a room with a legal pad and some pens, and they'll tell you. Better than doing that. But I get to do this, and somebody once said, what's this? Good morning. That's the sound of step nine. And I've got to do that, and I've got to clear this stuff away. And I really do think, for me, I nearly drank on unmade amends. I didn't know it was unmade amends at the time, but I really do think that it was unmade amends after coming round the work on the second time and looking at it again, because I was still acting out in a way that put me in a position to be hurt around relationships. I was extremely selfish in relationships. And it says we don't delay. We don't delay if it can be avoided. Now, I was told that there's a, I've put mine in four categories, and I did this recently, and this seems to work quite well, is trying to get clarity around, because when I look at all this stuff, I mean, what my first sponsor said was work outwards. It was immediate partner, work outwards. Yeah? And this is kind of interesting as well. This is another one, is another way of doing it. And I like other ways, because I like sometimes alternatives, because working outwards sometimes doesn't work for some folks. This might work for you. You put them into four categories. The first category is that you're willing to do the amend and you know where they live. In which case, good morning is really quick and easy. The second one is you know where they live, but you're not willing to do the amends. Okay? And then the next category is you're willing to do the amends, but you don't know where they live. And the last one is you're not willing and you don't know where they live. And you can kind of work it that way, because the first ones are easy. You're willing to do them and you know where they live. Get clear. Get clear. Don't hang about. While you're doing that, you might be praying to get willing to do the next ones where you know where they live. The ones that you're not willing give you the courage then to go find the ones that you're willing to do you don't know where they live. I think Simon's got an interesting story about finding some people, which I'll let you share in a minute. And then by the time I've done that, then I'm still praying all the time for to be willing for the ones that I'm not willing, and the willingness to go find them. And when I'm clear, you see, one of the things is that a lot of people balk on step nine, but also a lot of people get comfortable halfway through step nine. Mm-hmm. I did. Mm-hmm. I got comfortable halfway through step nine, and my head told me, selfishness, self-centeredness said, you don't have to do the rest of it, it's okay. It was short, they were short relationships, it didn't do any damage, she's okay, they're okay, they got married, there's all this stuff going on, you didn't need to do that. I justified it, and I end up sick. Sometime down the line, because I'm still acting sick in relationships, because I haven't got a perspective on what I got. So I take these unmade amends. I take unmade amends and I take amends quite seriously. I look at it at the proportion that's been given in the book, the proportion of how much, and this brainstorming that they do around it. I sat down with my sponsor and discussed the amends. He said things like, when I was going to do these amends around relationships. He said, if you go speak to these people face to face, don't get laid. And I said, okay. And I didn't. You know, because that's what got me there in the first place. I think it's very important. It's very important. Treat these people with respect. That's what I'm trying to do. It says here that it tells us how to show up. If I can find it. Here we go, on page 83. It tells us exactly how to show up in these people's lives. It says we have to show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Now, we've been looking at character defects up until now. We've been concentrating on character defects. And interestingly, have you noticed that in the promises, those defects are actually removed in the promises? Mm. Selfishness, self-centeredness, self-seeking. In the promises, it gets taken away. We get taken away during amends. We're spirituality in action. We're living this thing. How about patience, tolerance, kindness, and love? They'd sound like character assets to me. So we're asking God to show us these things as we're clearing out the past to have our defects removed. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. I believe that those were extravagant promises. I didn't believe they would come true. But from their experience, they say they are being fulfilled amongst us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. This is going to take time. But they will always, promise, always materialize if we work for them. Always. Some of these promises are actually guaranteed. There's some guarantees in there. They're from their experience. And what's really, really interesting, when this book was written, when this book was finally finished, there was nobody in the world sober longer than 5 years. Nobody. And there was only a couple of women by the time that this was published. Nobody. Bill W. wrote this when he was 3 years sober. Impossible. It ain't possible. I've met a lot of people 3 years sober. Impossible to write this kind of book. Okay? Now, what I do know, I know now that there was a lot of help going on. Everything in this book doesn't come from us. Doesn't come from alcoholics. Everything in this book comes from someplace else. Bill assembled it with the help of other alcoholics, so it matched alcoholics. Those 12 principles that we've been looking at are in pretty much every spiritual religion or concepts that you can come across. Yeah. Dr. Silkworth was extremely influential in the beginning of getting this thing put down. As we'll see in the when we look at step 12, he basically coached Bill on how to actually carry the message. There was other folks around the Oxford groups at the time. Sam Shoemaker, a priest in or pastor in New York, was also influential at the time. And what they did was he wrote a bit and he sent it off to all the other groups, and they kind of credited it and read it and corrected it and sent it all back. And so it's a collective. And I believe it's inspired. I really do. And remember that before 1935, there was no answer to alcoholism. There was no answer. Occasionally people got religion. Occasionally people got well. But there was no answer. This is an answer. This is a set of principles and a way of life, as we'll see tomorrow when we start looking at 10, 11, and 12. This is a way of life that really works. Really works. That solves all my problems. Not just alcohol. All my problems. But it asks me to be painstaking. Taking pains over. You know, take pains over. To do this part of my development. I wasn't. I paid the price, I believe. I got painstaking. I got painstaking. I continue to be painstaking. If I owe amends, I owe an amend. I sometimes have to ask people if I owe an amend. Right now, I believe major amends. I hope I'm clear. No one's come up to me. I've done inventory. I don't see any big ones. I see a couple of small ones that I need to do. And I've got to do them. I don't live this life perfectly. I can't. You know, it says no one among us has maintained anything like perfect adherence to these principles. Yeah. And I always say, I apologize if I sound like I'm preaching. I apologize if I sound like an expert. I'm just a drunk. But I've got to do this to be where I am right now. I've got to do this. If I don't do this, then I'm going to go back. And I know because I've been there. I've walked that road. I know what it's like to go back into untreated alcoholism sober some length down the road. I don't want to go there again. So I'm painstaking about this phase of my development. I'm painstaking about amends. Perhaps I'm a bit heavy with sponsees about it as well, but there you go. I think it was passed on to me in a certain way. I'm very kind of rigid with myself about how I do this. It doesn't mean to say it takes up all my day, but it keeps me free. There we go. I've done. Do you want to?
Yeah. Thanks, Peter. The bottom of the ninth step amends. It says, are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I was at a CA conference just in April, and there was a guy who'd kind of been in and out trying to get clean and sober, and I was talking with a buddy of mine in this conference. He said, oh, you know, there's so and so, you know, he's in and out, you know, he gets clean, you know, works a few steps and then, you know, goes back out. And he turned around to me and he said, oh well, you know, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. And I challenged him on that, because that's taking what the big book says out of context and applying it to somebody's recovery. We don't recover sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. We have a guaranteed solution for alcoholism, as it's outlined in here. I ended up speaking to the guy, and what it turned out is that the guy absolutely wanted to get sober and was willing to do anything, but he just wasn't met with somebody who was properly armed with the facts. And as it turned out, the guy had been trying to get sober, and he was 3 or 4 months, you know, away from this stuff. But he was suffering from the spiritual malady on page 52. And problems in personal relationships, greater misery and depression. What he actually needed to do was to revisit the first 9 proposals in order to clean up some areas of his life where he was still acting out of untreated alcoholism. Yet people would brand it, oh, we, you know, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. And it's not. Beg you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. By the time we get to step 10, which we'll go into tomorrow, it says the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. That's why I introduce myself as a recovered alcoholic. Some people don't like that. They don't think it's humble. Sorry. It's my experience and it's what the book says. And we get to that spot. I continue to revisit the first 9 proposals. I continue to stay active in 10, 11 and 12 because my life gets better and better and better as a result of it. You know, and that was for this sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly business, you know, and they apply it to the amends process. And it says they will always materialise, is the condition, if we work for them. Do you know? Just a couple of experiences around amends. What Peter mentioned about this finding people. I did a geographic move over to Monaco about 7 years ago because obviously it was living in London that was the problem, and too many bars and knew all the cocaine dealers, and so Monaco was the right option. Sunny, nice beach, bound to get sober there, not going to drink as much. Got there, still drank. When I first went through this work with Peter, the first thought that came to mind was, well, I'm living here now. A lot of my amends are in London. I'll just write letters. No. What I needed to do was make several trips back to London directly do those amends. You know, and I spent days driving around London looking for the sandwich shop owners that weren't there, looking for previous business owners that I stole from, driving around, arranging meetings, meeting with people. And it was very easy for me to say, and I even used the big book as a weapon against it, because it says some people cannot be seen, we send them an honest letter. And I was going, yeah, but, look, no, they can be seen, but you need to make the effort and to get on a plane and go over there and fix these meetings up. And I did it. And it was work. The amends process is work. And there was one situation that I had that I will share with you, and that I'll offer to you, and I can, if anyone's looking for people, I'll give you the number and name of this firm afterwards. There were a bunch of people that I couldn't find. I'd looked in the telephone directory, I'd looked at co-workers, I'd tried to find these people, driven around, looked for their old buildings, they weren't there. I mean, I tried every imaginable way, including prayer, to find these people, and I wasn't able to find them. But I knew I needed to had to set this straight. Now, out of that came a 12-step call that I'll go into in a minute, but I couldn't find these people, and I tried every way of finding them, but I knew that this family that I had stolen from and that I owed amends from, I knew that the son was a drug addict because I'd used with him, and I knew he wasn't well. And I went on to the, or Peter actually said, you can't just not do it and just accept that. You need to take more action. And I went onto the internet and I found a company called, I can't remember the name of it right now, I've got the email at home, it's like peoplefinders.com or tracesetters.com tracefinders. And I went onto the internet and I thought, right, I'll try this. And I had to pay like £15, £20 because there was, I think, about 8 or 9 people that I needed to find that couldn't. So anyway, I phoned the guy up. Did what the book told me to do. He explained to him what I was trying to do, and I need to find these people. And he said, this sounds familiar. He said, isn't this ninth step business that they do in Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, yeah. He said, he said we get calls like this once in a while. And he knew exactly what I was trying to do. And he said, don't worry, I know how important this is to you. I'm going to get on it straight away. And within about an hour and a half, he emailed me a printout of these people, where they lived, and their phone number. I had to pay for it, but I was willing to go and set this straight. Now, as a result of that, I contacted the people. I met, on the next visit back to London, I met the mother of this family. She was willing to meet with me. And I had a check with me because I stole from them, and I explained to them what I was trying to do. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, trying to straighten out the past, get my life in order. I can't get over drinking and drug addiction until I do this. Here's a check for the money I stole. And she said, thank you very much, really pleased to see you. And I said, how's Nick? And she said, her eyes welled up, and she said, Nick is a heroin addict and he's on a methadone script right now and he's not well at all. And I said, well, maybe if there's anything I can do to help him, please let him know that there is a fellowship out there called Cocaine Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, that would be able to help him. There's also a fellowship by the name of Co-Anon for families and friends of other drug addicts, and I sent her the link to that, and I was able to help her get the help that she needed for her son. I wouldn't have been able to have helped that woman if I hadn't have gone to any lengths to try and find those people. And I said, is there anything I can do for you, Maureen, to make this right? And she said, can you just respond to my emails when I send you an email? And I respond to her emails every time she emails me. There was another amend that Pete was talking about in regards to the sex amends. Now, I wasn't as spiritually fit as Peter was when I approached this particular amend, but and I was warned. And Peter said to me, and I said, I need to go and see this girl because this girl basically her family had been put under a different identity and were given new passports as a result of something that happened, a drug related incident that happened, and her family had been shipped out of London under a new identity. She was out of London as well. And I was with this girl and I harmed her. It was an abusive relationship. There were a lot of drugs involved and alcoholism was rife between us both. And I needed to go and clean this up with her. And Peter said to me, don't get laid. Meet in a neutral location. Make the amend. Listen to what she's got to say. Write it down so you know what to do and then leave. I didn't do that. What happened is that 1 hour led to 2 hours and 3 hours in a hotel restaurant, and that 3 hours led to dinner, and then that dinner led to her staying the evening in the hotel room with me promising her lots of different things. And I woke up in the morning and I phoned people and I just said, this has happened, this is what happened. And I'd been very dishonest with her and very selfish with her. And I then said to her, this shouldn't have happened, I'm sorry. And then I hurt her again and she was crying and she wasn't happy, and I damaged her again as a result of that amends process. Now, I went back and I sought counsel with what I needed to do. And I said, if I go back to her now and try and talk to her now, because she put the phone down on me, I'm going to hurt her again. And what happened within that period of time, there were about 3 or 4 weeks that passed, and the spiritual malady returned. And I was starting to become restless, irritable, discontent, and I couldn't understand why. I had a feeling of uselessness, and the internal discomfort became so unbearable that I was waking up, and I rang Peter and I said, I'm terrified, I think I'm going to drink, I keep thinking of a drink here, I don't want to, but I need to get round to me, let's talk about it. And Peter kept saying to me, it's that amend. And within that, I saw that I had used an unselfish amend as a self-seeking exercise. Mm-hmm. Now, what that did is that blocked me from the sunlight of the Spirit. That blocked me from power, because I was misusing spiritual principles in a self-seeking way. And the reason I share that with you is hopefully from my experience it will prevent you from doing the same and doing that. And on page 70, you know, it got me right between the eyes as well. It said, If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we will believe we have been forgiven and we have learned our lessons. If we are not sorry, obviously I wasn't, and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. Step 5 says if we withhold things in step 5, we will drink again. Step 9 says, if we are afraid to face our creditors, we are quite sure to drink again. Yeah. And in this 9th step piece here, after the sex inventory, it says, if we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. Mm-hmm. 3 areas, step 5 and 9, it tells us if we don't do this, we will drink again. And that's based on experience, and I'll back that up. I'm not theorising either. That's a fact out of my experience. I'll just finish one. What happened with that? It was suggested that I write to her, letting her know I'm sorry for what had happened, and I really want to make right for the way that I'd hurt her in an amend. Now, I didn't hear from her for about a month or two, and I was back in London at my mother's house, and I had a flight out at 11 o'clock in the morning, and it was 8 o'clock, and I have a text message on my cell phone. This was about a couple of months after I'd written the letter, letting her know what I wanted to do. And she's on the text message, it said, Simon, you know, you mentioned in your letter, if there's anything you can do for me, or there's something you can do, can you phone me? And I rang her and I just said, hi, Donna, it's Simon, is there anything that I can do for you? She was in tears. And she said, I don't know what's happening here. She said, but I've been diagnosed with bipolar from a doctor. I've been diagnosed with manic depression. And I said, how terrible. I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm sure you're seeking medical help there. And she said, well, that's not all. And she said, I'm losing weight. I'm paranoid. And I can't stop drinking. And I can't stop taking cocaine. And she said, can you help me? I cancelled the flight and I said to her, I'll be over within 2 hours, and I let my mum know what I had to do. And I went back with a copy of the book Alcoholics Anonymous with some literature. I 12-stepped her, qualified her, shared my experience with her, talked to her about God and the 12 steps, exactly as it asks us to do in working with others. And that night I took her to her first meeting. Now you see, I had to seek guidance on what to do. If I'd have gone straight back in there and said, you know, that I shouldn't have done that at that time, I would have hurt her more. But because I went away and saw, and none of this is really me, this is what I was guided to do through prayer and what I was guided to do under the direction of a sponsor. I'd never have thought about to do that on my best day. But under good sponsorship and this program, I was guided to do what I did, and the amend turned up, and it wasn't in my time, it was in God's time, and I was able to effectively 12-step her, take her to her first meeting, get her connected with a woman sponsor who'd had a spiritual experience as a result of working the steps, and as far as I know, she's still sober today. Now that is God. That is not Simon Clark. Yeah. One of the other things I'll share with you is my experience of working with others and other people getting to the ninth step. Because when we get to the ninth step and we get over halfway through, like what happened to Jim, his family were reassembled, he got a job, he started feeling better, thinking better, looking better. I've worked with a number of guys over the last year who would take him through the first nine proposals, who had got well. And they were getting their lives together. Now, what happened with these guys is that they started to go off in a different direction. What they didn't do was work with 10, 11 and 12. What they did was start to think, well, this is okay. I've worked the process. Everything's all right now. I feel great. Don't want to drink. Things are getting better. Wife's back in the bedroom. Children are talking to me. Work's going better. I can do this myself. And one of these guys went to the church, didn't work with 10 and 11, didn't work with others, didn't attend meetings to take a service commitment to give of himself to others, and he disappeared. Wednesday, a week ago, he'd phoned me and said, "Hi, it's me." I said, "How are you doing?" He said, "I'm fine. When's the next meeting?" And I said, "Well, it's Thursday night, big book study." And I said, "How are you, Sean?" And he said, "I was doing all right for a period of time, but I've drunk again. And the family that I tried to rebuild and tried to work with, they don't want me there anymore. What do I need to do?" We met with him, reviewed what had happened, and we believe we're going to be working with that guy again, taking him back through the work. I've also worked with people who have got to the ninth step. Things have got so good, they've just disappeared. And I don't respond to anything. But I don't chase them, you see, because I know that drug addiction or alcoholism will kick them back in, if they're lucky. The importance of backing this whole deal up in 10, 11 and 12 is absolutely life-saving. I've worked with people who have gotten to the ninth step, never seen them again. They don't come back. But what they do, you see, is what Bill says in page 14 and 15, and we hit this pretty hard in the morning, is that if an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through self-sacrifice and work with others, he's surely going to drink again. He won't survive the certain low spots ahead. And that's been the experience of the people that I've worked with. They stop working with 10, 11 and 12 and they just drop off. Now I need to stay in this fellowship. I need to continually, I have a daily reprieve. And I need to watch for this stuff as it comes up. And when it comes up, I need to ask God to remove it. And I need to make daily amends as I make mistakes. Because I'm going to make mistakes. The importance of cleaning this up. And I keep those promises. I believe that those ninth step promises that we've read, I believe those promises stay in my life if I'm working with 10, 11 and 12. If I stop working with 10, 11 and 12, I start getting the opposite of those promises, which ultimately is the page 52, the bedevilments. See? Backing this up in 10, 11 and 12 is absolutely life-saving. And when I go and do this, amends and working with others, my program absolutely exploded as a result of that. I think I'm pretty clear on that. I just wanted to share that with you. Thanks.
We're pretty much there. Thanks everyone for being here and allowing us to do this. Come back in the morning, we'll finish it off.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.